KQED.
From KQED Public Radio, this is Forum. I'm Mina Kim. Today, we're coming to you from KRCB in Sonoma County, where wildfires have taken lives, destroyed neighborhoods, and displaced thousands of people. Losing a home or fleeing from a wildfire can be a traumatic event. Keeping track of loved ones and even monitoring the news about the North Bay wildfires is stressful as well. In this hour, we look at how to recognize the signs of strain, fatigue, and trauma, ways to take care of each other, and the mental health services being offered at evacuation centers as wildfires continue to burn. From KQED Public Radio, I'm Mina Kim. Today, Forum is coming to you from the station KRCB in Rohnert Park, which is also broadcasting this show. Sonoma County has been hard hit by the fires. More than 2,800 homes were destroyed in the city of Santa Rosa alone, and a significant portion of deaths are from this county. Now, as search crews and cadaver dogs begin sifting through debris, the death toll is expected to rise. Thousands in Napa, Sonoma, Mendocino, and surrounding counties remain in evacuation centers or without power in their homes. And the entire Bay Area remains blanketed in poor air quality. So in this hour forum, we are looking at the emotional toll these wildfires are taking as we begin day five of this disaster. We'd also like to give a very special welcome to KRCB listeners and also give our thanks to this station for hosting Forum today, which usually broadcasts out of San Francisco. Let me tell you who is joining us for the hour. Michael Kennedy is Behavioral Health Director for the Sonoma County Department of Health Services. Good morning, Michael Kennedy.
Good morning.
And also with us is Alexa Stone. She is a mental health clinician, a licensed clinical social worker for the Sonoma County Department of Mental Health. Good morning, Alexa Stone.
Good morning.
Also with us is Alan Siegel, psychologist and associate clinical professor at UC Berkeley. Good morning, Alan Siegel.
Good morning, Mina.
Well, Michael Kennedy, I'd like to start with you. You are the behavioral health director for the County of Sonoma. What can you tell us about what you're currently doing to provide services to people affected by this?
Yeah, so again, something this affected our whole county, right? So really an incident, this is really traumatizing for everybody. And I just wanted to also mention that I know our sister agencies in Lake County, in Mendo, in Napa, everybody's really working hard to provide mental health services. For us, it started, early Monday, where we were able to mobilize our staff. We had to move from our campus and then move to a site where we were able to start to provide not only mental health services for all of our clients, but then mobilize our staff so we could be at all the shelters, 22 shelters in all. We have staff, about 50 staff in the field around the clock, and to provide support to folks who are being either evacuated or folks who have lost their homes.
So you're still very much in crisis mode right now?
Yes, we've been doing this for about 6 days, making sure that, or 5 days, making sure that we have staff right now at all the shelters. And then also I'm in the health department, so our public health has 25 or 26 nurses also at the shelters with us, working with folks who have either been evacuated or lost their homes. I just want to also mention that 8 of our staff have lost their homes. One of our staff, Donnie Dean, lost his home and then right away is at the shelters providing support and services.
Well, Alexa Stone, you are one of the clinicians who have been at shelters in Sonoma County. Tell us where you've been.
I've been at the Findlay Center.
And what have you seen among evacuees in terms of the reactions that you're seeing from people at these centers?
Yeah, I've been there, the last 2 days. And the first day that I arrived, they actually had several residents that typically live in Oakmont, which is a retirement community, So most of them are elderly. So we helped them all adjust. And I spent a lot of my time with a woman who has no family, who lives alone. This is the first time she's ever had to experience this. She's 95 years old. So we just really kind of walked them through the process with the help of the Red Crosses there. So they're the ones that are checking everybody in and sort of running all the, making sure there's cots, enough space, and tracking everybody. And then we're sort of there to provide the support and make sure that they are comfortable and getting their needs met or if they want somebody to talk to. And we also, that Kaiser's there providing medical support. So if anybody needs their prescriptions.
When the fires first broke out, I was at an evacuation center and I was seeing a range of emotions, but overall people seemed relatively calm and almost happy that they had escaped at least. And so can you talk to me a little bit about the range of emotions that you're seeing and the steps that people go through emotionally from the moment that they're fleeing from their homes to where they may be now a couple of days later? And I'm only saying, and that's only a portion of people because these evacuations continue and more people do continue to come to shelters around Northern California. But if you could just walk us through that a little bit.
Yeah. So the people that I worked with, it's just like you described. So there's definitely a range of emotion. You know, we had one man come in that was visibly upset, right? So he was crying, sort of confused, you know, was upset about multiple things, about his home, his belongings. He wasn't able to get all of his medication, so he was worried about that. So we just provided, you know, additional support for him. And, you know, then you had other people that were just sort of, I would probably say mostly in shock, just sort of vacant, just sort of sitting there, not really knowing what to do, and kind of just going through the motions of, oh, you know, am I hungry? Am I thirsty? Where should I go? I mean, that's the other thing about being in the shelter. There's not a lot of to do. They're trying to give people things to do. So they're having briefings. They're trying to play movies. They have little game areas, but a lot of people are just sort of sitting around, right? So that's a big transition for a lot of people. You know, normally you have your daily routine, right, that you get up and you do every day, and that's been completely changed. So I think a lot of people just sort of feel helpless. And there's, you know, some anxiety definitely about what's going to happen, how long it's going to last. You know, I think that's the other thing is that it's not over. So a lot of people are just in that constant state of anxiety of what's going to happen next.
And what are you doing to help people cope with all those different emotions?
That's it. I mean, so a lot of it has just been about sitting with people and sort of being present and just listening to them. Sometimes it's about, you know, talking about other things in their life that they enjoy or stories they want to tell. So I spent several times with a lot of the elderly folks and we just talked about like stories and things from their past and their life. It just sort of kind of distract them from what they were dealing with. And then for other people that were, it seems like it's really impairing them at that moment, just sort of trying to sit with them and get them to, you know, take deep breaths, you know, try to just drink some water, maybe go for a walk, do other things like that to just kind of get back in your body and sort of feel more present. So just really sort of simple, you know, basic sort of focus on getting through that crisis at the moment and then, you know, finding ways to almost sort of distract yourself so you can kind of feel comfortable to get through the day.
Michael Kennedy.
Yeah, one of my staff was talking to me about that. You know, it's such a wide range. He had one person who, you know, found out their house is okay. They're really, really up. And then he had another person he was talking to who they actually lost their mother in the fire. So you can see just such a wide range of emotions for people. And, you know, and I do think, you know, we're focused at, right now. It's we're still, you know, we've got the weekend and the wind is still going, the fires are. So in general, it affected such a huge, the whole city is affected, right? Because at different times, the fire's been in different places. I live right really close to the Coffee Lane, and so
is
you know
that development that was essentially leveled.
Really, yes. And so you know we were really worried, and then you know I have 5 kids; they're all like college age, many of their friends have lost their houses, and they're very upset. And people are just in general just very anxious and. So all this coordination, all this work together, the Red Cross,
yes.
us, The cities all are involved in the county, you know, and you have all a lot of folks that are just working. And I think that helps us to be working.
Yes.
Because, you know, you feel kind of helpless.
It's interesting that Alexa Stone was talking about the need to stay busy. It does keep you focused on work as opposed to all the precariousness of the situation that's going on all around you and the unknown that lies ahead. Alan Siegel, I want to try to break this down a little bit. For people who are losing, who've lost their homes, what are they going through? Like, what is the effect of losing your home on somebody typically?
The effect can be profound, and I think it's important for people to know that being afraid is not something you should be ashamed of. People should reach out. Those with social resilience, with connections, tend to fare better. So it's normal to have upset feelings and to have nightmares. I did a study after the Berkeley-Oakland firestorm of 1991 of the dream journals of people whose homes burned down and a group who were evacuated, but their homes didn't burn down in the fire zone. And one interesting finding was that the people who were evacuated and thought they lost their home, went through the trauma of the day, they fared worse and had worse nightmares.
You mean they thought they lost their home because their home actually
was in the zone and no one knew, just like what's going on now. Some people don't know whether their home is burned down or not. And, you know, they thought their pets died. They might have thought their spouse or family members were hurt. So these people, and this, I think this generalizes also to, you know, Puerto Rico, to Texas, to Florida.
So, I'm sorry, I just want to clarify. You're saying that people who were unaware, who are unaware right now of what the status of their home is, are faring worse? Or are you saying people whose homes survived?
Yes, both.
Both.
Okay. I mean, you know, eventually people became aware, you know, that whether their home was gone. But people who are close to the zone, they are traumatized and they can suffer some of the symptoms of post-traumatic stress disorder, sometimes as much or worse. Of course, our attention has to focus primarily on the survivors who lost their homes. But it's important for people in a much wider area who are traumatized and suffering some of the symptoms of post-traumatic stress disorder, reach out. Get help. Don't feel ashamed. This is something you can get through, and it's important to get support.
Is that the same as what often gets coined as survivor's guilt, too?
Yes. The people who were in the zone whose homes didn't burn felt painful survivor guilt. I mean, they would dream that fires were coming and getting them at night. They were completely helping all their neighbors who had lost their home, and they were living in a burned out zone. So these folks really need support, not necessarily more than the other folks, but it's an unrecognized group, which is even greater in number than the people who are immediately impacted.
Alexa Stone, how quickly can these effects start to show up for people? I mean, I read in some cases it can be months, like initially none of these things show up in any dramatic way, and so you think you're okay, but then they can show up, you know, 8 or 9 months later.
Right, or, I mean, even years, really. It just, and sometimes there can be other things that can happen, right, that can trigger it to come up for you. So, you know, sometimes they say, like, anniversaries, for example, can be a reminder of what happened, so it can start to bring up all of those symptoms again. I think typically what we've been seeing so far is, I mean, a lot of people are still in that sort of shock state. And because this isn't over,
yes,
people haven't,
not over.
Right. They haven't moved to that state of, you know, grief and recovery. And like Alan was saying, you don't know if your home is there. And I mean, and I also know this is my first experience being a disaster relief worker. And also that experience is really traumatic. I know for me, I've been going through those feelings of like guilt that I get to go home and go to sleep. Mm-hmm. But then, you know, this is still all happening. So that's another big impact that I've been firsthand experiencing for the first time.
I can relate to what you're saying.
Yeah.
How are you supporting the people who are waiting for word on missing loved ones?
So what they've been doing at the shelter, though, is they've been having, I think it's the Office of Emergency Services, they're coming actually to the shelters and giving updates one-on-one with people. So I think that's been helping. They also have a board set up at the shelter where people can write down names of people that they're looking for. So I haven't actually come across somebody that is actively looking for somebody. I did have some contact with a man yesterday that we were concerned that somebody might be looking for him. We're pretty sure that he has a mental health issue. He was very confused and sort of disoriented, but he had a checkbook with an address on it, but he couldn't tell us a phone number. So we actually called in about him just in case somebody might be looking for him. So we called the sheriff's department and reported that maybe this might be somebody is concerned about.
In Michael Kennedy.
Yeah, so I just wanted to say for parents, you know, because really right now we're still in the middle of this. So these are just some things that parents can do, you know, really spend time with their kids and answer their questions honestly and simply. Help kids express their emotions, you know, through writing, singing, whatever, body movement, exercise, talk to others, take time for yourself, don't make any major decisions, breathe, drink a lot of water, eat healthy, spend time with family and friends, let them know what you need, and, you know, it'd probably be good to avoid caffeine and alcohol right now, right?
Good to avoid, but yes, Alan Siegel.
So another thing that is important is to limit exposure to media, especially for kids, but also for adults. I mean, I know that I was drawn to the hurricane coverage, earthquake in Mexico and the fires. And
what does that do to people? Explain how constantly.
There's a number of research studies that show that it dramatically increases anxiety. Mm-hmm. And post-traumatic stress disorder is an anxiety disorder. So you're actually making it worse for yourself. So it's important to limit that, especially for children.
What are the signs to know that you've hit that point where you just need to turn off the social media?
Well, it's important to just look at the fundamental polarity of what post-traumatic stress disorder is. So it shifts between numbness, as Alexis was mentioning, and intrusiveness, like you can't stop thinking about it. Mm-hmm. You're dreaming about it. Mm-hmm. You relive aspects of it. You feel overwhelmed with fantasies. You just can't get it off your mind. And some people are more numb, and some people have more intrusive thoughts. But many people, it shifts between the two. And again, that's something to recognize in yourself and seek help. But also if your loved ones are going through this, to help them realize they may need some support.
We're joined on the line now by Marty Palmer. She is clinical director of Mentis, a nonprofit that provides mental health services in Napa County to people of all ages and socioeconomic levels, including the uninsured. Marty Palmer, good morning.
Good morning to you.
And I understand that your organization is providing therapists at evacuation centers. Is that right?
That is correct. We've had therapists deployed to the various shelters in Napa and American Canyon. They will be there through the weekend and moving forward as needed.
And what are the needs of the evacuation centers in Napa in terms of therapeutic support, therapy?
Yeah, some of the needs have already been mentioned. People are confused. Some of them are highly anxious. Some of them are feeling numb and paralyzed. We're seeing a wide range of emotions being expressed, and the important thing, as it was mentioned before, is to be able to be present for these people, be able to listen, support them, hold their hands if that's what is needed, take a walk with them, help them to move, help them to come back to whatever routine they're able to maintain during these very difficult times.
And Mentis, it supports a lot of low-income people. Can you talk about what are the specific concerns in low-income communities and where the biggest stress areas are and how you're trying to help them?
Well, of course, during this time, people are worried about how their asking for assistance is going to impact them financially. We will see anyone, regardless of income, insurance. We work with all the uninsured folks in Napa County, people who do not have insurance for medical and mental health needs, and without our agency being present, they would have no place to go. We will continue to see those people. Our staff is about 50% bilingual and bicultural, so we're able to provide assistance to folks who are Spanish-speaking.
And do you have enough capacity, or are you able to meet the demand? Right
well, now? Capacity is challenging for all of us right now. Of course,
yes.
Some of our staff also have been evacuated
yes.
and also going through their own stresses and struggles right now. But we do have a staff present here, and we are ready to help as much as we can. We're working very closely with Napa Unified to provide support to students and parents as they're ready to return to school next week. We're also checking with the various senior centers in town. Our seniors get highly anxious. Some of them are not able to get communication. They don't have cell phones, and they're feeling a little bit disconnected. So we're trying to provide assistance there as needed. Also working with the Family Resource Centers. We've been present here in Napa, the Family Resource Center, just trying to really assess what is needed and trying to provide assistance as we're able to do so. Also
did you
want
to give out
with the county.
Sorry. Mm-hmm. Yes, did you want to give out Menti's intake line?
Yes, absolutely. Our intake line is 707-255-0966, extension 132. We continue to see our regular clients here at the clinic that, you know, come to our clinic for ongoing treatment, but we are taking new clients. There might be a bit of a wait for them, but we'll see them as soon as possible.
Well, Marty Palmer, she is clinical director of Menti's, a nonprofit that provides mental health services in Napa County to people of all ages and socioeconomic levels. Thanks for joining us this morning.
Thank you very much.
And I'd like to invite our listeners to join the conversation. We're talking about the emotional toll of the wildfires that are burning across Northern California, how to recognize the signs of trauma, methods for coping, and also the mental health services that are being offered right now. And we're joining you from Sonoma County at KRCB in Rohnert Park within miles of fires and evacuation zones. And we want to ask you, how are you coping? What's gotten you through these last 5 days, whether you're near or far from the blazes? What are your questions for these mental health professionals? Or maybe you're a survivor of other fires, the recent Lake County fire or the Oakland Hills fire a while back. What helped you through that you'd like to say to people here in the North Bay? The number to call is 866-733-6786. Again, that's 866-733-6786. You can post your comments on Forum's website, which is kqed.org/forum. You can email us at forum@kqed.org. You can tweet us at KQED Forum, and you can also share your responses on our Facebook page. And we'd also, of course, a special welcome to our KRCB callers to call in as well. Alan Siegel, we're about coming up on a break, but in terms of first responders, and you were talking about people having nightmares, do they also have the same effects, impacts, I mean, on the first responders as well?
Absolutely. Even just doing the research of talking to people about their traumatic experience during the Oakland fire and hearing the dreams was traumatizing, and I'm not even a first responder. For first responders, they live through not just their own trauma, but vicariously everybody they're helping, and their lives are in danger. So they're subject to post-traumatic stress disorder or other traumatic reactions as well, and need a lot of help and support.
Well, we'll talk more about making sure that everybody who's responding to this, whether as somebody who is affected or somebody who's helping those affected, gets help. I'm Mina Kim. You're listening to Forum, broadcasting today from KRCB in Rohnert Park, Sonoma County, just miles from fires that continue to burn. We're talking about the emotional toll these wildfires are taking as this disaster is in day 5. And we're talking with Michael Kennedy, Behavioral Health Director for the Sonoma County Department of Public Health, Alan Siegel, psychologist and associate clinical professor for UC Berkeley, and Alexa Stone, a mental health clinician for Sonoma County's Department of Mental Health. And we're talking with you, our listeners, who are telling us how you're coping with all of this, how you've gotten through this week, or if you've survived a fire in the past, what helped you through. This listener writes, seems to me local handcrafters could come volunteer, bringing donations of yarn, needles, hooks, and the patience to teach. Mm-hmm. If any of these people in shelter want to experience the soothing effects of handwork, I would do this. Alexa Stone, is that something that is a good way to try to deal with the stress of these times?
Of course, like I mentioned earlier, anything that's going to help you sort of have something else to focus on, something that's relaxing, right? We know that knitting yarn or there was a woman at the Sonoma County Fairgrounds that came in who does body work. So she was doing like cranial massages, was offering that. So there's been a lot of people from the community coming in offering their different services and abilities just to help people. Like I said, at the shelters, there's not really a lot to do for a lot of people. So having anything that they can enjoy will help tremendously.
And Michael Kennedy, you wanted to share some more resources in Sonoma County that you think are important to be aware of.
I really wanted to mention that just like person who called in from Napa, that, you know, in most counties, there's a network of agencies that provide mental health and substance use treatment services. And we have so many partners that are continuing to do that. Goodwill, SAY. We have federally qualified health centers like in all the geographic areas. They're continuing to provide services to people. And then also providing support to anybody who needs it.
And you said these resources are on your website.
Yeah. That's right. And I would say the hospitals, too. I just want to mention that, two of the hospitals were evacuated, and
yes.
And they're pulling things back together. They have staff at the shelters, too. So it's really been a community. Everybody's come together to try to support folks. So I just wanted to mention that.
Well, let's go to some of our calls. We have Joseph from Stanford. Hi, Joseph.
Thanks for taking my call, and also thank you for having this very timely discussion. I'm a mental health professional. My wife, her family are affected both in Sonoma County and in Napa with evacuation. We're hoping that they haven't lost their homes. And I just had 2 points. One, my friend who's a first responder was yesterday and the day before having to call people and tell them that their homes are burned to the ground. And just the point that I'll let your guests just mention or explain of vicarious trauma for first responders. And secondly, we're on Stanford campus and we're getting advisories about air quality. And there's a truncated response on the campus, at least as we see it. And, my wife is going through a lot emotionally. I am also, of course, but her more so, related to the fact that we don't know what's happening to our family's homes and the great disruption. And I just wanted to kind of mention the role of acknowledging suffering of people outside of the fire zone. It kind of, I think, would help some of those people to feel acknowledged that this is happening to more than just the people in the place that it's happening.
Yes,
and I'll
thank
take
you
my
for
comments
that.
Off the air. Thank you,
Joseph. Thank you for that. Alexis Stone, you were nodding when he mentioned vicarious trauma. I believe I might be coining
right.
that incorrectly, but
well, and it just made me think a lot about as like a social worker, we are taught a lot about like compassion fatigue. So you spend so much time like giving to other people and supporting them, and then you have to go home to your families and your own life, and how that can really, you can start to feel like you're just sort of drained, right? Like you can't provide for everybody. And so, we're supposed to do really good self-care,
yes.
right? Take care of ourselves. But that's really hard to do when we're in an active, disaster zone.
So what do you find helpful?
So I try to do things like yoga, but lately I've just been going to sleep as much as I can, honestly. And then you start to feel guilty because I get to go home and go to sleep and I'm not in a shelter. And so it's, for me, it's been trying to, as Alan was saying, limiting that, Facebook newsfeed constantly in front of me about, everything that's happening. So trying to just sort of shut off, right? So giving yourself time when you go home to like turn off the media, turn off the radio, and just like be with your family and just try to be present and relax yourself any way you can. So, obviously yoga and deep breathing and meditation
yes.
helps too.
And for those who are affected, Joseph also brought up just this unknown. There's this, how do you deal when you don't know something yet? So how do you deal with these great unknowns, whether it's a missing person, whether people's homes are okay, whether your family is okay? How do you deal with being in that state of not knowing?
Well, that's a good question. I think it goes back again to that self-care. So it's just about finding ways to know that's, that's just part of this process, right? So we're all going through that. We're all in the state of unknown. Yeah. So also knowing that we're all experiencing this together. And then you have to just find ways to cope with however you deal with stress. So a lot of times it's physical, right? Like a lot of people feel physical stress. So again, I really think finding ways to deal with however you do that, right? Mm-hmm. So a lot of us have ways that, and I don't know if anybody else has examples.
Yeah.
Of
Michael Kennedy.
You know, I play in a band, that helps me. The music, whatever, getting away from it and really giving yourself a break, that's one thing. But I think one of the things that's kind of exacerbating this too is just it's been going on for so long. Yeah. It's so extended now. We're in day five of this. And I know I've gone through a process where, you know, we're kind of used to the last 5 days, the smoke. So I think that's kind of a different spin on this, is that it's lasted so long.
Yes.
And I do want to also acknowledge what the caller talked about. I have two daughters that are away at college, one in Chico and one in Arizona, and they're so upset. And
do
both
they feel
of them,
sort of helpless to you,
yeah,
because they're so far
and they
away?
They feel so bad, and they're not here. And we're talking to them on the phone and saying it's okay. You know, they're texting all day long. Are you guys still okay? And it's almost
yes.
like.
You're really highlighting, Michael Kennedy, just the ripple effect of this, how far it reaches, which is really telling. I'd like to go to more of our listeners and Maureen from Sea Ranch. Hi, Maureen.
Hi there.
Hi.
I just had a little advice for people, well-meaning people, who are trying to comfort people who've lost homes. We lost our home in Santa Rosa.
Oh,
yeah.
I'm sorry.
And there's three pieces of advice I would want to give people. And I know people mean well. I've mostly been surrounded by incredible love and support. But the first thing not to do is to say something like, oh, wow. Well, you know, I know five people who've lost their homes. Okay? Mm-hmm. It's like telling a cancer patient, oh, you have cancer? Well, you know, I know five people with cancer. Okay? It's sort of like, oh, okay, I'm sort of a statistic to you, you know, and I know they don't mean well, but it's like people are almost caught up in this, I call it like disaster porn or something, where they're just sort of caught up in the whole situation and they don't think about, you know, the individual losses are profound. So please don't say that. Please don't say it within earshot of somebody who is going through this. The second thing is, and it's very common and it's understandable. I'm very grateful we're safe and my family's safe. My husband and my daughter in college, we're all safe. But when people say, hey, it's just things, you know, you're safe, we're so glad. And that's understandable, sounds completely reasonable. But the truth is, they weren't just things. They were my life. They were my daughter's art projects. They were my letters to my father. They were all my books. They represent my life. So even though you say they're just things, and certainly they're less important than human beings, it's much more than things. It's somebody's life. And the third thing is, if you have somebody that you know who's got a child, just like you were talking about, who's in college, who's far away, who's traumatized, reach out to them, offer your support, then listen to them, because they're scared and distant and feeling out of control. So that's all I want to say.
Maureen, thank you so much for calling, and I appreciate you sharing that with us. You know, it's important to hear, but I'm sure it was also difficult to share. So thank you. I'd like to go now to Mary Ellen Curran. She is Director of Mental Health at Santa Rosa Community Health Centers. Good morning, Mary Ellen.
Good morning.
We were just hearing from Maureen, and I'm curious if you have any more thoughts for her. There are a lot of people who want to help others cope through this. And so she was saying what not to do. Do you want to say any more about what to do for people who are in this place?
Yeah, I think, first of all, her advice was wonderful. And I think that it's really important to recognize the net of people that are involved in this disaster. One of the things you can do is much like what Alexis said earlier, which is to listen and support and spend time with people and not talk as much. Listen more. And be there for people. And that sounds very simple, but when you're in a level of disaster stress like this, we need to get simple and grounded. There are probably dozens of my staff here at Santa Rosa Community Health. We have 500 employees, and we've lost our largest clinic. And so everybody that I'm working with day in and day out is pretty shell-shocked. And one of the things that I am finding that works is when people talk to each other and say, oh, my gosh, you've lost your house, or how long have you been evacuated? What we don't want to do is the negatives that that were mentioned, but also to just say, oh, yep, and I'm here for you, and we'll get through this. So one person in particular said, choose the positive. Choose to be optimistic. And I know that sounds impossible in the middle of this week, but that is one of the pieces of advice I would suggest for people, especially when they're talking to others.
And Alan Siegel, when you were talking with people who survived the Oakland fires, and you've been talking about whether or not they're that nightmares are normal reactions and things like that, it's been a while now since that fire. When should people be worried that their nightmares may indicate other deeper things that they need to address?
Nightmares are one of the core symptoms of post-traumatic stress disorder, part of the intrusive idea that you can't get it out of your mind. But nightmares are normal after a disaster, even when you're going through any kind of stress. So people shouldn't conclude that having nightmares means there's something deeply wrong. It's part of the normal coping process. There's a gradual resolution that occurs over time where the nightmares become less frequent and less severe. And it's important to know that if the nightmares become more persistent or more violent or more unresolved, like ending in a threat that's unresolved, that means you're shifting more into a post-traumatic stress symptom kind of phase of recovery. Only about 10 to 20% of people after a trauma develop post-traumatic stress disorder, but many, many people will have nightmares or other intrusive symptoms, reliving dreams, fantasies, and that sort of thing. And relating back to what Alexa said and what Mike said, I mean, and the caller from Sea Ranch, reach out, find support, find people that care about you, call other people if you're outside the zone that are in the zone, and give them your support.
And let's go to more calls. And again, if you want to join the conversation, the number is 866-733-6786, 866-733-6786. Our Twitter handle is at KQED Forum. Our email address is forum@kqed.org. Our website is kqed.org/forum. And you can direct your questions and comments to Alan Siegel, psychologist and associate clinical professor at UC Berkeley, Michael Kennedy, behavioral health director of Sonoma County, Alexa Stone, a mental health clinician for the Sonoma County Department of Mental Health, and Mary Ellen Curran, director of mental health at Santa Rosa Community Health Centers. I'd like to go to Linda in San Francisco. Hi, Linda.
Hi, good morning. I'm a hospital chaplain here in San Francisco, and I just wanted to put in a plug for cultivating resilience through cultivating pro-social emotions as opposed to anti-social emotions. So those include gratitude and forgiveness and such like, but I am thinking particularly right now of compassion for ourselves. And maybe just a simple practice of, you know, putting your hand on your own heart and feeling your own kind wishes for yourself and just, you know, offering yourself kind wishes. May I feel safe. May I feel loved. May I know that I'm not alone. May I find a way to rest just in this very moment, even in these very, very difficult circumstances.
Linda, thanks for that call. I appreciate it. And it does underscore a lot of what people are saying. Alexa Stone, you wanted to talk a little bit about how people should cope if they may be having even suicidal thoughts.
Right. Listening to everybody talk. I mean, anytime you go through these type of traumatic experiences, or maybe, you know, you're already having pre-existing mental health issues and something like this can really cause people to exasperate, you know, already what they're dealing with, and then being displaced from your home, or losing family members or friends or, you know, even pets and homes can, I think, sometimes increase people to have thoughts of feeling like they don't want to be here anymore or thoughts of suicide. So, of course, I mean, and Mike can talk more about this. I mean, our crisis stabilization services are still available and up and going in the community. And also, if you're outside the community, as Joseph was talking about, it just made me really think about how helpful it can be to reach out and get your own mental health services, because that can just have a huge impact on your ability to feel like your fears and feelings are being validated and somebody else to talk to.
Well, yeah, and we do have
Michael Kennedy,
an active suicide hotline too, that is linked to all of our services. So and that's on our website too. So and it's another resource.
And any type of crisis.
Oh, sorry.
I would say really any type of crisis that you're in.
Yeah.
You know, if you're really feeling like you need immediate support, that is still available in Sonoma County right now.
Yeah.
And Alan Siegel, you wanted to add something.
If someone has been vulnerable to depression in the past, or if they don't have a good support network, they're going to be at the highest risk, so they should reach out, or people should reach out to those folks. Mm-hmm. Also, I wanted to mention that the Veterans Affairs Department of the United States has a great set of resources on their website. Just Google Veterans Affairs and PTSD. And there's an app called PTSD Coach, which is totally for the public and gives you super practical advice. One last thing on nightmares is that there's a simple technique that people might consider, particularly for children, if you have an unresolved nightmare, which is to create a fantasy or a drawing where the dream gets resolved. So if the fire is chasing you, then you have a magic fire hose that can put it out. And just that fantasy can help the dreams reduce their intensity.
Or even if they're not dreams, is it helpful just as an exercise for looking ahead to when this ends?
Right, and just like the positive visualizations or the positive affirmations that were mentioned as well.
Would that work for teenagers? Because this listener asks, any advice for teenagers going through these fires? What to look out for long term? They're dealing with uncertainty, worrying for family, friends.
Yeah, I think it's just sometimes it's, you know, teenagers don't necessarily want to talk to their parents, but this is a time where people can gather together and mm-hmm. find out what's on their mind. The same for younger children. Mm-hmm. You can address what they're afraid of. And one more important point for teenagers or children, it's important for parents to work on their responses, because kids pick up. They have a radar
right.
that senses the anxiety and the fear in their parents. So one of the best things you can do for your kids is to seek the mental health support that you need by reaching out, getting therapy, calling the hotline, or using the resources that have been mentioned by Alexis and Mike.
And we go back to more calls. Let's go to Hunter next. Hi, Hunter.
Hi, how are you?
I'm well. Where are you right now?
I'm just outside Petaluma. I'm a nurse, and I've been trying to volunteer this week, but haven't been able to get anything lined up. And I couldn't watch the news anymore, and got up this morning and meditated and packed a bag with my stethoscope and my blood pressure cup and my N95 mask, and I'm driving to the fairgrounds in Petaluma. I just want to volunteer and help, and I kind of feel helpless. I don't know if I'm doing the wrong thing.
Oh, Hunter, thanks for the call. Where should Hunter go?
No, I think
Michael Kennedy.
We definitely need nurses. And I know we've been at the Petaluma Fairgrounds too, and I know there's a medical unit there that's providing service for folks. So that's great that you're willing to do that.
So he's not doing the wrong thing.
No, he's doing the right thing.
But is that where he should go, or is there another place where people can be directed in terms of where the greatest needs are, Alexis Stone?
I think so when I was at the shelter at the Finley, we had so many people coming in wanting to volunteer, which is amazing. And they were directing people to go to the American Red Cross's website to sign up. And I'm sorry, I don't have all those details, but I'm sure we could get them.
I wonder if Mike or Alexis, you could talk about where mental health professionals could go to volunteer, or any kind of contact information, because, of course, in the Bay Area, we have a larger number of mental health professionals than other places, and a lot of them are empathetic and want to volunteer.
I yes. think it's the same exact thing. Through the Red Cross, they're really kind of coordinating, and then we're kind of complementing what they're doing at the shelters.
Well, this also, Rebecca has a similar question. I'm curious if there's a current need for mental health clinicians to volunteer, and if so, who could we contact to coordinate this? I'm a Spanish-speaking therapist and do psychotherapy with mm-hmm. families. How can I help? Is there a specific resource if you're bilingual and able to provide support to Spanish speakers?
I mean, again, as far as I know, the American Red Cross is doing most of the coordination, mm-hmm. so that's who we've been directing people to. I imagine there's going to be lots more opportunities as things start to settle yep. and people are sort of getting back to their lives and but are sort of realizing that all these emotions and feelings are still really there. Yes. And so
if there is an immediate place to go, don't worry.
Right.
Sadly, something will have a long-term yes. effect, and there will be a strong need for people. And I know in previous forum shows that there's been a strong emphasis that volunteers should register either with the Red Cross or with organizations first to be able to get a sense of where they can best meet the needs. And we're also tweeting out a link to the veteran PTSD resources that Alan Siegel mentioned. It's on our website, kqed.org/forum. And let's go to more calls. Let's go to James in San Francisco. Hi, James.
Hi there. Thank you for taking my call. So just to reiterate what some of your guests and callers are saying is that just the important need to listen. I was in Sonoma last weekend visiting friends, and ironically, I was with my cousin from Boston who was a retired pediatric nurse, and when this whole thing happened, we said, we have to volunteer. So she extended her stay, and we went to the community center in Sonoma, and they sent us to the high school. And we basically just volunteered doing whatever we could and just listened to people. I think I'm by no means a therapist or anything like that, but it was so important because everybody has a story, you know. And she called me last night when she got back to Boston. She said, I want to come back, you know,
well,
and help. And she was
well, thank
so
you
great
for
with kids.
Well, thank you so much for reiterating the importance of listening. I appreciate that. Let me see if I can get Amy from San Francisco in here as well. Hi, Amy.
Hi. Thank you so much for this wonderful show and for having me on. I'm a volunteer for an organization called Sidewalk Talk. We started in San Francisco 2 years ago, and now we're international. And this weekend we have volunteer listeners that are going to be going up to offer support in the Sonoma County area. People can go to our website at Sidewalk Talk SF, and they can pull the calendar link. We're going to have various locations set up in front of markets and stores, and then in the evening we'll be in various shelters, and it will be on Saturday and Sunday from 1 p.m. on. And the basic motto and premise is you talk, we listen. All of volunteers are trained. All of the groups are led by a mental health professional. And it's basically just honoring what everyone here is talking about, which is the importance of people just feeling that they can be heard and be listened to and not guided or directed in any way, but really just have a safe space to be heard.
Amy, thanks for that. Mary Ellen Curran, you are in Santa Rosa, and I just wanted to get a sense from you of what you think would be what Santa Rosa is going through as being literally being right now described as the hardest hit, more densely populated part of this entire fire. What are you, you know, gearing up for in terms of how to best support people in Santa Rosa?
Well, we have a large number of patients that are we don't know how they're doing, and half of them at least have had their health center damaged and unopened, and it's going to be closing for a while. So what we're finding is just providing reassurance that we will be here for people for all their needs, primary care and mental health. And I think Mike Kennedy said the piece about the fact that this is going on day five and continuing, we're beginning to see every day more and more anxiety reactions and trauma reactions as patients come in and pretty desperate that they will get their prescriptions and their mental health therapists will be available. And so in many ways we are having a parallel experience as staff because a lot of our staff have lost their homes, and a good half of our staff are not here because they are evacuated in other places. So it is a truly Santa Rosa intensive, I guess I would say. The piece that is interesting is that the caregivers and the first responders, that vicarious trauma component is really important. And so what we want to reassure people is we are resilient, we'll get through this, and the amount of community support that's come together. I was at the shelters at Elsie Allen High School and Cook Middle School yesterday, and there are so many volunteers and helpers, including bilingual Spanish-speaking people that have just come forward to say, I want to talk in Spanish to the people who need that. And so it's reinforcing the gratitude that we have such a strong community and that we'll get through this. I just want to reinforce that.
And Mary Ellen.
Yes.
Yes. Sorry, your last point quickly.
I just wanted to let people know that Santa Rosa Community Health and those that have happened to have been cared for at Vista Family Health, we are combining all our services and we're not going away. And there is a phone number if people who are, especially for the Vista patients, who won't know where to go. It is 707-547-2220 is our main line, and we will get people in to see them.
Mary Ellen Curran, Director of Mental Health at Santa Rosa Community Health Centers, thanks for joining us. And we go now to Sandy, who asks, I have friends whose homes were destroyed in the San Bruno explosion. They needed counseling for years. How do your guests recommend that we find good counselors? Resources for that, Alan Siegel.
Yes, you have to find what your insurance can cover if you have insurance, and look for low-cost help if you can. And that PTSD coach, there's apps, but basically reach out to your support network and seek professional mental health services if you need them over a long time.
And Alan Siegel, you've talked with people who've survived Oakland. Tell us what's at the end of this.
A gradual recovery. People who have good support do better and eventually get over it.
Alan Siegel with UC Berkeley. Alexa Stone joined us from the Sonoma County Department of Mental Health, as well as Michael Kennedy, Director of the Sonoma County Department of Health Services. Thank you all so much for being here today. And thank you also to KRCB and Rohnert Park for hosting us. Forum is produced by Irene Noguchi, Judy Campbell, Tina Lauerberg, Susan Britton. Our engineer is Danny Bringer. Our engagement producer is Amanda Stupai. Our interns are Patrick Fitzgerald and Anna Sterla. And our senior editor is Dan Zoll. I'm Mina Kim. Stay safe.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation.